fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, the host of the Color and Ceramics podcast. This first episode of 2026 is part of the Canadian Ceramic Project, a series of conversations with ceramic artists across the country, exploring how place, material, and lived experience shape contemporary Canadian ceramics. Today on the podcast, Zanna, our producer, and I are joined by Jillian Boone, a Calgary-based ceramic artist whose work is deeply shaped by the rhythms, colors, and textures of the ocean. A graduate of the Alberta College of Art and Design and the University of Calgary, Jillian brings together material curiosity, technical skill, and a strong commitment to education. Though she lives and works on the prairies and serves as the ceramics technician at the Wildflower Arts Center in Calgary, Alberta, her ceramics transport us to coral reefs and tide pools, alive with movement and layered with luminous blues and greens inspired by grassy lakes. In this conversation, we explore how place, memory, and water continue to shape her creative voice. Jillian, thanks for joining us today on the Color and Ceramics podcast. We are super pumped to have you on board. We love your work and think this would be a great opportunity to talk about Alberta ceramic artists. And you're one of the leading folks in the province, so welcome aboard.
Thank you. I'm really pumped to be here.
So I wonder if you could start off with telling people a little bit about your journey in clay. You probably didn't start yesterday. So tell us a little bit about how you got here today.
All right. I was just talking about this the other day with someone when they asked how I got started in clay. Now, lots of people I know either had a really good high school art teacher or they stumbled upon a community pottery class somewhere, but actually my mom, when I was 15, asked me, what am I going to do in the summer? And she said, I told her nothing summer. And she said, you have to do something. So she looked into the Red Deer Polytechnic. At the time it was Red Deer College, their summer series program, but for kids. So it was called Summerscapes. So when I was 15, I went to Red Deer. I stayed in res for a week. And in that week, I got to do pottery and bronze casting and printmaking and drawing and painting. So I had five different mediums in the week. I came home and I was just like, I'm going to be an artist. And my mom thought, okay, let's go with that. And so at the end of grade 12, that's the only place I applied to. And she also said, are you putting all your eggs in one basket, really? And I got in and I never looked back.
Very cool. Now, you had those five things that you were working on, from casting to printing and so on, you ended up in ceramics. And many of the people we talked to got bit by the bug with ceramics and never turned back. How did that happen for you?
When I was in Red Deer, I really loved sculpture, and I couldn't take enough of just sculpture classes, but the pottery studio there was really thriving and very welcoming, and I found that I could make things quickly in clay, whereas bronze casting was not quickly. So I think I had an equal love affair for both clay and other mediums of sculpture when I was there. But when I finished my time there, I heard it was easier to get into, at the time, ACAD, now AU Arts, in the ceramics program versus the sculpture program. So I applied to the for the ceramics portion. And then when I knew that was going to be my route, I really amped up my time in the clay studio. And that's, I think, when I really fell in love with the medium.
Very cool. And have you abandoned sculpture at all?
No, but my main practice is clay, and I do sculptural things within clay. That being said, I work at an art center, and I joke here that I have a master's in hot gluing and a PhD in paper mache. I just finished for my sister's bachelorette. I just finished a 4-foot ice cream cone out of paper mache, just as a prop for photos. So that's fun.
That's cool. So you can do darn near anything then.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your work. This is an audio only podcast, and we'll have links to your website and Instagram page and all that sort of stuff up on our information chunks. But tell us a bit about your work, because you got a very unique style of things that you really focus on.
All right. So, I often refer to myself as a landlocked mermaid. I was born and raised in Alberta, and my work, everyone says, oh, you should sell at the coast. Your stuff looks just like, whoever's work on the East Coast, the West Coast, wherever. And I said, yeah, but isn't the cool part that I am a mermaid in Alberta? Because I do bring all of my, not all, most of my inspiration from coral reefs and underwater sea vents and tidal pools, all sorts of water-based textures and landscapes comes through in my work. I've always loved color. My favorite color is green. Many things I own are green. My glasses are green. My couch in my living room is green. And so you'll find lots of color in my work, very juicy texture or juicy glazes to mimic that wet bits of tidal pool that you may see. And then I do pull some inspiration from places in Alberta. So lots of people have hiked in and around Canmore and have been to Grassy Lakes. And not many people know, unless you're probably a geologist or I've told you before, that Grassy Lakes is a coral reef in Alberta, which is cool. And so, I mean, way back, all of Alberta was underwater. And so we get different little hidden gems like Grassy Lakes that you can still see actual corally bits and fungus and seaweed growing there that also grows on the coast. And then very cool colors there that I really draw a lot of inspiration from as well.
Very neat. It is true. Alberta is was a sea. I was just down at the St. Mary's River a couple of weeks ago, and tons of fossils of clams and all of those kinds of things down there. 70, 90 million years old. So we're really drawing on some history as you talk about it, some long-term history, as well as the landlocked ocean. Yeah, cool. So how do you approach your work? Are you throwing? Are you hand building? What clay do you use? Tell us a little bit about sort of the technical side of things.
All right. I fire with Cone 6 clay. I use M370 Plainsman. It's a white stoneware clay, and I hand build primarily. I like to say I throw on my wheel maybe 3 or 4 times a year, but I love texture. So I build in a way that's slab building, but it's very small slabs that I use. And I push each tiny slab into different texture molds that I've made. And it's kind of in a way, it's like a cinnamon bun. You make your base by rolling out your slab. And if you were to put your sugar and your cinnamon on, I push that dough or clay into textures. And then sometimes I roll it up, and sometimes I would cut strips and then build with that. So for the bakers, they might be able to visualize kind of how I build that way. But I create my textures based on in my texture slab. So I'll roll out a chunk of clay, and then I will find something, whether it's the end of a highlighter that creates a really cool bubble look, and I will create that texture all through there, fire that slab, and then I'll have that in my toolkit of that is the bubble kind of look that I have. I use lots of textured papers to create maybe a cobblestone look, but when paired with like a wave rolling texture tool, you don't know, you don't see cobblestones anymore. You might see the bottom of a sandy beach. Yeah, yes. And paired with those bright, juicy blues and greens and purples, it's very interesting to look at, as well as turn around and hold. So I like to make I talked about how I love sculpture, but I do heavily make functional wares. So make plates and bowls and cups and things. But they're not your typical smooth, perfect items. They all have little undulations, whether it's a spot for your thumb or a little tip where your mouth go rim. And they kind of can mimic kind of more stone-like pieces.
So people really, when they pick up your mugs, or I was thinking of one of your teapots that I've seen, which really kind of look like it comes out of the ocean for sure. When people touch that, they must have a certain visceral sense when they do. Do you get that from people who who pick up your pieces?
Oh yeah, I know more people that would say, "Oh, I would never use that because I don't want to break it." But in fact, some of my pieces look quite delicate, like the teapots. They have lots of little gills and flanges and tentacles and little seashells on them. But they're built sturdy, and I'm a tactile person, and I want everybody to pick everything up. I want everyone to break the rules in the galleries and touch all the pottery. Don't touch the paintings, touch the pottery. Feel how it is. Because you never know if somebody is not a tactile person, they might have that visceral reaction because they're expecting one thing and they get another when they actually reach out, make the contact.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is the work that you're doing got a journey of its own? You've been doing these ocean focused themes for a bit. Are you starting to move in a different kind of direction or adding a little twist here and there to your work?
I think that I have landed on ocean as my home base, and I always love and have that as my focal reference and inspiration. But I do like to travel with my family, and every place I travel, if there is any water, whether it's a lake, a puddle, the ocean, I consider that trip to be a research trip. And I usually take something out of that trip and bring it back and translate it into my ceramic somehow. So, for example, a year and a half ago, my sister was doing a year-long around the world trip. And I was fortunate to meet her halfway at 6 months into her trip. My husband and I went to Egypt to meet her. And I chose Egypt for all the reasons that National Geographic tells us to go. But the Dead Sea has some of the, or sorry, the Red Sea has some of the most vibrant coral reefs in the whole world. The Great Barrier Reef in Australia is the biggest. But the Red Sea did not disappoint. And so it blew my mind at how much inspiration I pulled from each little spot. I was able to stick my head underwater and just look, because it was not like any other snorkeling or scuba diving I've done in Central America or South America. So it was very cool to see different colors, bring those back into my work. So I think the evolution of my work might change in adding colors, maybe adding different textures, but I think it will be subtle at the moment anyway, of any changes that might come.
Cool. Now I'm really interested in creativity and inspiration and how people use that. So you just described having your head in the water, looking at all of this cool stuff down there, lots of it living and moving and of different colors and so on. Can you, I don't know if you can articulate this because sometimes it's not done in words, but how do you pull your inspiration out of the water back into the clay studio?
Tricky. I touch everything, but I am fearful to touch things in the actual water because I don't want to disrupt things. I don't want to get stung by things. But I use my imagination of what it could feel like. And then I try to bring it to life with what I have at my house. So if I have seen something recently and I don't have the right texture, and that's the thing that's going to get me hunting is whether I take clay and go push it on some tree bark to create a new tile that has maybe a familiar feeling like tree bark, but put in a new context. You don't necessarily think of tree bark. That's tricky.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's an experiment for you, that it's not you come up with an idea and then go and deliver it. You come up with these ideas of how do I create this texture? And I'll play, like I play around with old bits of coral that I've found on the beach, right? And often they can produce a texture on a piece of clay that's just perfect. But it sounds like that's what you do, is kind of do this experimentation with the
Right, yeah.
shapes.
And for the textures that I use, I have some coral in my studio as well, but I very rarely reach for that when I'm trying to create something because it's kind of nice to have a little hidden Easter egg, as we call it, right? When you're picking something up, turning it over and be like, hey, is that a macaroni noodle? Or is that a highlighter? If you actually know that double little bubble thing I'm talking about, you'll look at it now next time you pick up your highlighter and look at the end. And so it's kind of fun to have those everyday items hidden.
So that work, when people grab it and have a look at your work, it's a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
And it's too to the bottom. Like I make lots of little dishes because I want people to be able to have my work in their everyday use. And so most pottery, unless it has luster, can go in the dishwasher in the microwave. And the dishwasher, if something is upside down, I believe that the whole piece should be visually interesting. So all of my work have nice textured bums. When they're upside down in the dishwasher, they still have something nice to look at.
Yeah, very nice. Zanna, do you have any questions for Jillian before I switch topics here?
You know what? This is just really interesting to listen to, and I'm inspired by creating different textures as well. Would you consider it a mold, or I don't recall the word that you used when you're touching tiles. Yeah, I love the, sorry. Yeah. No, I love thinking about touching something and then, okay, how am I going to recreate this in my own clay at home? And I have a highlighter over here too, and I'm just like, okay, this is so cool. And I was thinking about that teapot that Bob mentioned too, that was just spectacular. And I did touch it, and I wish everybody that would listen to this could be able to touch it because your stuff is unbelievable. I'm not thinking
I'm
of any questions
interested
right now. I'm
in
just
a
kind of in awe
challenge
about your
that you might have
process. But so
had.
thank you for sharing it with us,
I
and
think
thanks,
one of
Bob,
the
for
things that
asking.
I've known personally about clay is that it's darn difficult. And so there's always seems to be some challenge that I encounter. And when I talk to other ceramicists around the world, almost everybody's a great problem solver because they've run into something. Can you talk about a challenge that you've had and how you overcame that?
Oh, yes. And Challenges happen all the time, whether it's from materials and minds running out, or you know, the writer's block of or creativity block. But my current challenge is time. So I've got two little kids and they are my everything, but I do find it challenging to just get in my studio these days. So I do get in there every week. But not enough time because those little rascals need me.
Yes, absolutely. So how do you do that? Like, do you put it in your calendar? Do you say, okay, Thursday nights is my time to be down in the studio? Or do you steal away a couple hours when somebody falls asleep? You can go, oh, I can get downstairs or get to your studio. Like, how do you do that?
Definitely an organic flow. I am very fortunate that I have a home studio. It's attached to my house. It's a great little space. It offers everything I need in that tiny little like 10 by 12 space. And then I've got a kiln at home as well. So I can work until the wee hours of the morning if I choose. So I find I'm a night owl anyway. And so putting to my kids to bed at 8:30, it gives me time to kind of unwind for the day, get in my studio. Sometimes I feel creative, even if I'm just cleaning my studio, getting it organized. And then I'll look at something old if I move it around, and that'll inspire me to get moving on a new series or a new line of cups or something.
Hey, you mentioned the word series. One of the things that I have found for myself is that in order for me to get better at something, I need to do a few of them, like a series of things. And a mistake I had made in the past was I'd make one, right? And I don't think I learned enough from that. So now I make six or eight. By the time I get to the sixth or eighth one, it's not bad. Number one, maybe not so much. How do you work in series? That you've used that word. So how do you do that?
Yep. If I'm working on small things, like I make little dishes, I can make those in one go. But if I'm making larger items, I need to give my clay time to set up while I'm building, because I'm using these little slabs that sometimes are about 2 inches high, maybe 4 inches long, and I put them together. I slip and score. But if that clay is too soft, it will collapse on itself if I'm building things like teapot bodies or larger vases. So I will do a series of three or five items all at once. Now, that being said, depending how much time or energy I have in the studio is kind of the deciding factor of three or five. But that way I can also say, yes, I work in series, but they also create a series or a set that I'm working on at the same time, and they can either be shown together or purchased together, and they kind of create a nice little grouping. I mentioned before, I want everybody to have my things in their house, but I want people to have handmade things in their house. So to have options and little sets is really cool to then sit down and say, we're going to drink out of Jillian's cups today. And that might spark a conversation about, you know, anything while enjoying something handmade. So that's my work, but you can do that with anybody's work. If you sit down and say, this mug was made by Bob, I'm going to use Bob's mug today. And then we talk about Bob, right?
It does provoke different kinds of conversations when you're holding something that's handmade as opposed to some imported piece.
Yeah, and they all have a name. Even if you are listening and you have handmade mugs or cups in the cupboard and you don't know they have a name, they all have a name, because if Lisa made it, it's named Lisa. If Diane made it, it's named Diane. Like, they all have a name.
Yeah. And you know what I find? I do a bit of that too, but I also have a little story in my head of where I got the piece and how I got the mug or whatever it is. And then sometimes there's a couple of pieces I've got that I can't remember the potter's name, and I can't make it out from the mark he's made on the bottom, but I remember the story about buying it, and so I can share that with people when we're sharing some sort of beverage.
I love it. I love that.
Very cool. So one of the things that we haven't really talked about is how you apply color. So you said you got a few, you love green, and I know you use blue and a little purple. Are you using underglazes? Are you adding oxides or stains? Like, what's your process there?
So I've got a great mix of glazes in my home studio. So I've got glazes that I've made up myself from recipes that I found around the glaze community. And then I also have what I call my accent glazes. And those are so I have some pre-made Mako glazes. So in my homemade buckets of glaze, those primarily have oxides in them. And then they have a melter ingredient as well as a stabilizer ingredient. So that's how I get my very glassy, like watery blues and green glazes. They have a high frit content in them, but they are stable and food safe, which is really good. And then I do use a stain wash under some of my pieces, and that will give kind of an ethereal look of a melty, tealy, or blacky kind of murky bit under that green or blue that I might have, just to give it some depth. So I find if something is glazed blue, it's blue, and just blue won't do for me. I want it to be deep. I want it to have layers. I want it to have as much information as I can. Because there's already information of texture in my work, I want the glaze application to mimic that. So my application of glaze, primarily if I'm thinking about a cup or a mug, I will pour a glaze on the inside, swish it around and pour it out. And then all the other glazing I do is by brush. So I brush everything on. That way I can really control where there is two glazes overlapping, where there are three glazes overlapping, where this color meets that color and that color doesn't touch that color. So I have complete control of where I put the glaze on the pieces. But because I use that high frit glaze, it's a mover and a shaker. So it likes to melt, likes to move on its own, which then gives me that lovely eutectic of where glaze A meets glaze B to create glaze C. So I love the control I have with what I, because of research I've done and test tiles I've done, I know what happens when glaze A meets B, but I also know what happens when glaze A meets glaze F, which is really cool. And when it's all together on a surface, it's a chef's kiss. Mwah.
And so I bet you then, like many of us, when you open the kiln, you know pretty well what you're going to get when the piece is finished, but there's still an element of surprise.
Oh, totally. Yes. And you talked earlier, you asked a question about a challenge. And I actually did a project where I challenged myself to create some cups on the wheel with no texture. And it was very hard for me because I threw cups, they're straight, they're smooth, and I really wanted to put a tentacle on or something, but I didn't. And I wanted to create some magic with the glaze. And that is, I'm thinking of these cups. I have at least four or five glazes on parts of every cup, and they have that movement, that magical, that mystical deepness that I strive to achieve with everything. But they came out very successful, and they kind of gave me some reassurance in smooth is okay because I'm 100% texture 100% of the time. So now this is good for me to just step sideways, not step back, but step sideways from texture. From full texture.
Well, you might have smooth sides, but they certainly won't be plain, will they? Hey, now I want to ask you about your advice for a younger person coming up in the world of clay. Younger, I guess I mean newer. They don't have to be young. You work in a ceramic studio that's run by the city, and so you have a lot of folks coming through there that you've seen. So you probably have had lots of experience seeing people learn and get better at what they do. What's some advice that pops into your mind for people like that?
I would say to either find a studio and that fits your vibe, because there are, I think, like 8 clay studios in the city now, and everyone has a different vibe. Find a space that you're comfortable in, you're feeling creative, you're feeling warm and welcome, and then change it up. So, like a new place, you can always go back to place A, but and I'm not saying you need to come to where I work, but change it up, because instruction from different people gives you different skills. Now, some places you might have the availability to have 5 different instructors over the course of 6 months, or 5 classes, but each facility is different. And then once you have that arsenal of good instructional bits, find a good buddy that's at the similar level to you and exchange notes. Say who is your favorite instructor, what they taught you, why, and then figure out who theirs was and go try and take a class from them.
Great idea. Great idea. Well, I guess one of the things that I hear from you and that we've heard from others is around the notion of community and how important community is. I mean, the clay community is a pretty cool bunch, I think, because we share so much with each other as a, nobody's hiding things. At least I haven't met anybody like that. But like, what's your sense of community? Because I think it's really important.
Oh, I like to say I've got my fingers in everybody's business. I love the clay community because there are so many different avenues that you can go down and meet people and be involved. And I mean, we met through the Alberta Potters Association, but that's just one avenue of clay community. And so I think that coming to the events, being social, if you are able, is a great way to get in the community and learn, be involved, and hopefully grow as a clay artist, whether you're emerging or been in the scene for decades. It's an ever-evolving community too, and there's always the flip of who's retiring, who's emerging, but it's great to have that overlap.
Yeah, you really do need different ideas. It was funny. I've been making these little boxes with a little bird on the top, and I had somebody down in my studio the other day said, "Oh, you should put the bird in the box." And I went, "Oh, I never even thought of that." So having somebody around to give you a different idea and see your work and have a comment on it is really can be very helpful.
Yeah, and I mentioned how I'm fortunate to have a home studio, but it does become isolating if you're not involved in that community, whether it's an online ceramics community or in person. But in Alberta, we've got a great, great sense of community here.
Very good. Well, I thank you so much for being here today. Zana, did you have anything you wanted to add before I say goodbye to Jillian?
I guess one of my things that I'm most curious about when we're talking to people these days is like any like an exercise or a practice or something when you're just feeling like stuck. And you mentioned that cleaning your studio can even be that thing that just gets you feeling creative. But yeah, curious when you come from a group studio as well where you work, is there anything that you would teach students that okay, like do this to loosen up, or do this to just really get back into a flow, or go outside and touch things, or whichever. Like, I'm curious, just kind of if there's anything that jumps to your mind in that sense of if you're stuck, this is something that you would say, give this a shot, or have a conversation, whichever.
Yeah, I've got 2 things that jump into my mind. One is if you need any inspiration for color, because I love color, John Britt's Cone 6 Glaze book is awesome. You can leaf through that book and just look at the pictures and be inspired. You can read a couple paragraphs, be inspired. That book is awesome. And it's anyone who's making their own glaze, it's a very easy book to read and understand and make a glaze without taking a course. So that's one. And then a physical thing that I like to do is stretch my hands. And I work with my hands in my job. I work in the clay business. and my hands get tired. So stretching my hands before getting into my studio is a wonderful thing. But there's a Canadian company called Do Yoga With Me. I think they're out of Vancouver and Victoria, and they have a 20-minute neck yoga, and that one's also good to just sit, reset, get that neck stretch in. And then they do have one for wrists and hands as well. But that's important, right? We got to take care of our bodies to be able to do the things we love.
Hey, Jillian, thanks so much for joining us on the show here today. We really appreciate you being here. And I really hope people connect with you and your work through your websites that we'll put up. So thanks so much.
All right. I'm here for that.